Hello everyone, it's Jana here, or Jane's Ven, and it's the 13th of July today. And I mentioned in an audio last week that if you wanted to buy a car back in East German times, you had to go on a waiting list for at least 10 years. And also that car designs didn't really seem to change very much over the years, or even decades. Now, today I thought I'd expand on that a little bit. I think part of the problem was to do with when Germany was divided up into zones to be given to the victorious forces after the Second World War, the one that became East Germany only contained two car factories, and I think they were both assembly plants rather than component production sites. So there seems to have been a problem with supplying parts, car parts, throughout the lifetime of the German Democratic Republic, or GDR. There was this supply problem, but then in the 70s and 80s, as people became more affluent, desire for car ownership increased, there was a lot of demand, and it couldn't be satisfied. Now, in a market economy, of course, what you do is regulate supply and demand through price, but that wasn't possible in East Germany because the policy was to keep prices constant. This was probably to counter the capitalist market economy phenomenon of booms. Incidentally, it also meant that there was just one price for every item you could buy. So it didn't actually matter where you bought it. All over the country, you'd pay the same thing for that item. So there's no point going to a different shop expecting a bargain. Try and imagine that for a minute. demand far outstripped supply, I think that was also the reason why there was not much point changing the design, because I think this is something in the market economy. Companies wanting to make a profit, they have to sell, and I think one thing they do is tweak the design of the product ever so slightly, so they can then through marketing persuade their customers that this is a completely new product that they must have, that they must buy, and that's how they sell more. So, that didn't apply. The only good thing about the long waiting time was, however, that people had enough time to save up for a car, because there wasn't anything in terms of credit. So when you got contacted that your car was ready for collection, you had to put the cash on the table. In the GDR, two cars were made for sort of general consumption of the population. One was the Trabant, and one was the Wartburg. Trabant was very small, and it was sort of a starter car, though for most people it would probably be the only car they would ever have. And I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that this car reached iconic status, and even already at the time it was affectionately known as the Trabi. Because it was so bad, it became a bit of a joke. It cost around 10,000 marks to buy in the 80s. The first ones were made, I think, in 1958, something like that. And they looked very much like cars did at the time, sort of very rounded features. And then a bit later, it got more boxy. And then after that, didn't really seem to change very much anymore. It had two doors, there was a lot of... It was a very small car, so it was a bit fiddly trying to climb in the back, as it was a four-seater. And I remember I couldn't wait to be big and old enough to be able to sit in the front and have my own door, as it were. A very interesting bit about it was that it had a two-stroke engine, because I think that was one thing that could be built in a GDR, so they went for that. But that made it sound more like a moped, like a motorized scooter, and it had this very distinctive sound of a so you always knew when you were in a Trabant. I think the speedometer went to about 130 kilometres an hour, but I remember once you reached 100, it would definitely start to struggle. The other very distinctive thing about it was that it was made of some kind of composite. Again, that was something that could be made in the GDR. It wasn't metal. And that gave rise to the jokes about it being a cardboard box on wheels. So you did not want to be in an accident with it because it didn't dent, but you'd have a hole in the chassis, and then bits would break off. And I've seen it under the paint. It certainly looked like it was cardboard under there. The gear stick was behind the steering wheel, like I've seen in old American cars. And I remember my mum trying to change gear. I always said to her it looked like she was stirring the soup. It had a very basic interior, and I suspect not much in terms of suspension, so you certainly didn't get a very smooth ride in one of those. But because it was kind of the symbol of the GDR, Trabi is still around. Many people kept theirs after unification because they loved the car so much for all its disadvantages. You can still get them in East German cities for sightseeing tours. Some even made sort of limousines that you can hire for special occasions. The other car that was available was a four-door kind of a family car called the Wartburg. I suspect that was called after the castle of the same name, which is near Eisenach in Thuringia, or Thuring. I know I went there once on a school trip. This was a car that, even though many people could afford it, not many people would get one because, again, of the supply problems. So what the government decided at one point was that they would import cars from other countries. So from the Soviet Union, there was the Moskvich, which translates as Moscovian, so I suspect that the factory must have been somewhere around there. And that was of a four-door family car type thing. Then there was a Lada, or Shiguli, which was also made in the Soviet Union under Fiat license, so it very much looked like an old Fiat. And this was a four-door family car as well. My dad had a Shiguli for over 20 years. He looked after it very well until he finally upgraded to a Toyota. And also from the Soviet Union came a car called the Saporosh, which was just a little bit bigger than a Trabant. My dad called it a Zappelfrosch, so I suppose to a German it sounds like that. Zappelfrosch means Wrigley frog. I don't know whether it drove like that as well. Then from Czechoslovakia, or Czech Republic now, was the Škoda. Škoda, of course, was bought by Volkswagen later on, so they're still around, many of them on UK roads these days. Then from Romania came the Dacia, which apparently was an awful car, prone to breaking down. And from Poland there was the Polski Fiat, also a Fiat license, looked very much like one, but there's the smaller one, smaller Fiat. By special license and special from special accounts, you could get hold of a Golf, a Mazda, Peugeot, Citroen, Volvo and others. However, I don't remember seeing many at all of those on the roads because I had no idea what they looked like until much later on. I remember one of my classmates, his dad worked as a lorry driver internationally. He must have had access to one of those accounts because they owned a Citroen. And even though we were all in awe of this car and that they had a West car, I thought it was slightly bizarre that you had to pump it up before you could go anywhere. When I was young, I remember I played this game with my dad about guess this car make, and it became a lot more difficult when there were more Western cars on the roads later on, because they all looked the same to me with their streamlined designs. Still a game that I sometimes play on the motorway with Simon when he makes me guess the difference between a Rover and a Jaguar. You know the models. I usually wait until it's close enough so I can read what it says on the back. Anyway, that was it for this week. And I'll talk about roads later on. Thank you for listening.